I get you entirely. I'm just thinking how many Muslim, Arab, African, Chinese Joey Itos do we need to make this globe work nowadays? A lot more.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the interesting thing is I do believe blogs are already really doing this. I mean, if you read Salam Pax's blog from Baghdad and you understand and you listen to his voice, and it's this voice of, you know, a 20-year-old in America, 80%. You know, I mean, politically it's different, but he's listening to the same CDs, has the same, you know, issues. And he's gay, you know, and I think that what happens when you start communicating and chatting with people in different countries with the first voice, you really realize how much more similar you are than how different you are. And when I go traveling right now to all these different countries and you sit around and you hang out, there is a great deal of similarity. And once you become friends, and I think that, Rick Smith from Newsweek, in a recent session, we asked a question to him about this: why doesn't he cover Africa as much? And you know, basically, the problem with the mass media is most people who read Newsweek just don't care about people who are culturally further away. So there's just that you can just plot it and say, okay, well, Africa is the furthest away, you know, and then you know, Israel is much closer because you feel culturally close to these people. Well, the fact is, if you make a friend in or read a blogger in Afghanistan and you start reading a blogger in Africa, which is interesting, suddenly you have this link and you care. And at a recent conference, Jack Kemp said something very interesting. He says, it doesn't matter what you know if you don't care. You know, and I think this is also key, because you can print all you want in the media, but unless the people who read it care, it's not going to sink in. It doesn't have an effect. I mean, I wouldn't say that absolutely, but that's generally the case. And so I think the blogging has two objectives. One is to try to create good information and proper reporting, but the other really important part is to make people care. And that's why the personality behind the blog, the talking about your personal life, getting people to say, hey, this guy has the same problems that I do, but he's in a completely different political situation. Maybe I should care about him, you know, or her. So I think that's also key, and that's what the mass media doesn't have.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, and it's exactly sort of the charter of what we're trying to do with audio blogs, and to extend them globally. If everybody we could broadcast to would deliver us their networks of information, including, you know, emails from grandma in Afghanistan or Liberia or whatever, we'd have an incomparable network of good, solid, impassioned, objective, but also motivated information.
Mm-hmm. And we're talking about blogging right now, but one thing that's really been interesting for me is I started a IRC chat room. IRC is Internet Relay Chat. It's an old technology. It's like 20 years old. But I made a chat room, and people who read my blogs are hanging out in my chat room. And so now there are generally 70 to 80 people sort of camped on this place. And there are probably, you know, half a dozen people chatting continuously.
All the time.
All the time. And there are people, you know, there's somebody in the Canary Islands, there's somebody in Spain, and in, you know, Bulgaria, America, Japan, you know, almost every country is almost every time zone is represented anyway. So there's always somebody who's chatting. And Reverend Akma, for instance, is hanging out, and he's a chaplain of my channel. So I think it's a lot like MASH, actually. So you've got the regulars going around saying the regular things, each from very different countries, very different lives. And then you have the occasional guest who wanders in. You have occasional events where somebody's missing for a day and everybody's trying to figure out what's going on. But the other really...
And then you have a sort of TV audience out there, too, just watching.
Yeah. So you have the other people who just kind of watch, but it's really a fascinating thing, because what happens is I wake up in the morning, and while I'm blogging, doing work, you know, I say good morning to everybody, hey, and somebody else is going to bed, somebody else is going to lunch, you know, somebody else just is chatting from work, and then all day long during between meetings, I come in and drop and say, hey, anything going on? Oh, somebody here was looking for you, you know, or somebody's supposed to come by here, can you tell them? It's like having flatmates. And what's really interesting is you get a much more personal, emotional link with these guys because you've been hanging out with them. And then, you know, you're joking around, and then suddenly Reverend Akma says, hey, you know, I forgot there was a chaplain in the room. And it's a very funny situation where you get a cultural mix. But, you know, when you hear the first-person, real-time voice of a chaplain telling you what he thinks about the situation, you know, sort of an ethical dilemma, and suddenly it adds, it's very different than just reading his blog, right? Because everybody is spending time together. So I think that one of the things currently missing from blogs is, so blogs have gone from the publishing static mode to a form of communication where it's about the speed of email. So if I blog something about somebody and they don't reply blog within a day, it's a little rude. But the chat adds a whole other element of speed where it's actually real time. And so I think that's one other piece that's coming, and that ties into that emotional caring link. Because now that I know about these friends of mine who are in the Canary Islands or who are in Bulgaria, and I actually start reading their blogs more because I see them online. And then, you know, and anyway, so I think that's another element.
That's fantastic. There are two things I want to ask you. I'd love to hear more about the social dynamics, the neighborhood qualities of this new space. I mean, how do you deal with the rude boys and the flamers and the wreckers?
This is going to be a test. A couple of key things. In any good community, we have a couple of regulars, and they're really tough on the regulars and very, very nice to the newcomers. So anybody new that comes into the channel, we ask them who they are. We have a little robot that we register them in. So next time they come in, it heralds and say, hey, so-and-so is so-and-so, and his blog is at this place. Da, 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 da. And then the other thing is, you know, there's a couple key ways of dismantling arguments and conflicts. And so there's Jeannie, who's a regular, and she's a woman, and she's good at, dealing with adolescent male problems, you know, whereas I'm there to regulate other problems. And so far we've had, you know, a couple of tense moments, but nothing horrible. Mm-hmm. We'll see. But it's an early phase in a community, just like any community at the beginning is really fun. And so we'll see if it survives the test of time. So far it's doing quite well because I think the other thing about chat rooms is that if the quality and the level of the discussion is fairly high, it is kind of difficult to disrupt the conversation. You can also ignore people. Right. You know.
This is exciting. But I want to come back to sort of real world, on the ground, old politics, old media, which are still managing or mismanaging the whole planet. I mean, we have a very, very ugly, ugly prospect in Iraq now, enormously costly. I think people are just beginning to wake up to the reality of the pushback in Iraq, but also the cost, $87 billion, a new bill on the table. What's happening in real world politics in this country and elsewhere?
So not related to blogging at all.
Yeah, I start from a suspicion that it's a rough time for the world, for the environment, for disease, for poverty, mm-hmm. for all manner of macro measures.
At one level, I think that's true, but at another level, you know, I think that the general awareness of the population about issues is increasing. Bill Clinton recently in a speech was saying, you know, the Republicans are sending money to Africa to help AIDS. You know, you have at a variety of fronts, you have a lot of things that we're losing on, but you also have steady progress in other ways. And I think it would be wrong to just sort of write it off as that it's getting worse. I mean, I think we go through yep. turbulence, but I do think it's getting better. I think the technologies, you know, Howard Dean's use of blogs, you know, this whole attention around the current campaign. I do think that, there are a lot of civil rights issues, and the pendulum swung in one way, but you can definitely see the forces building to swing it back the other way. And so I'm not that pessimistic. I think that the North Korean situation is at risk, but at least there's a dialogue going on. I do think China and Russia understand North Korea, and we need to figure out how that's going to work. But again, I don't think we're any worse than we have been historically, and we're a lot better than we were, 50, 100 years ago.
By what measure?
I think the participation of people in government. I'm trying to think now. Here's maybe another way to look at it. I'm stealing this from Bill Clinton's speech.
He's no longer president, you know.
Yeah. We had the League of Nations, and then we had the UN, and then we had we've steadily started creating more processes, and they go through their periods. But we're growing, we're getting closer and closer to something that looks like a global dialogue. Even though they get a lot of heat, the World Economic Forum, for instance, where you actually have Arafat and Sharon talking and people like me able to just ask questions there and just access to all of these people. And then that, you
but
know.
I don't, Davos is not a measure of the world. We also have, you know, more suicide bombs, more rockets into the Gaza Strip than we could have imagined 5-10 years ago, to name one thing. We have grave threats to the whole biosphere. We have poverty at a level we couldn't. The world has never known 3-4 billion people living on $1 or $2 a day. I mean, it's
so,
serious.
Yeah, so I agree. I think that what I guess my point was that the even though I complain a lot about the current media and politics, I think that structurally politics has continued to grow slowly to newer forms of a global democracy. I do agree that there is a huge problem with poverty and with the ecology. And these two issues, so the question is, can we evolve our democratic process quickly enough to try to figure out the solutions for, I think those are the two biggest issues. The fact that we are going to see a 50% increase in population, and almost all of that is going to be in impoverished nations over the next 50 years, and the fact that global warming, on any measure by experts, is going to be a catastrophe if we stay on this current vector. And so I do think that the human rights issues and the political issues and, you know, Republicans versus Democrats, all that's kind of a cyclical thing that just continues to get slowly better. But the question is it going to get better fast enough to deal with these issues? Because I can't think of a solution right now for these issues. I mean, I can theoretically think
you're of a issue. Cheerful guy in a dark time. Guide us out of the woods here, if you can, in a minute or two.
Well, so this is kind of a cop-out, but I believe in emergence. And emergence is about... and the reason I believe in emergence is I grew up with the Internet. And I grew up when we were building tools, not really thinking about how all of this would work together, but just understanding that each of these components were correct, you know, were good things, you know. And when good things all connected together, an emergent order came, and the Internet became a working anarchy, right? And the Internet generally became a good thing, I mean, from a technical perspective. And so, to me, the way I'm trying to think about it, I do think about issues on a big scale, but I'm trying to focus more on the micro thing and say, okay, each individual is a component of a very chaotic system, and if each individual can have the ability to process information, to communicate with its neighbors, to escalate things to a higher level if necessary, and if we have and again, this is kind of scientific, but if we have the cybernetics correctly so that there are feedback loops, positive and negative, so that we can control signal and noise, I mean, all the properties of a good emergent system are built, then my sense is that the intelligence of the collective will be higher than the intelligence of any expert to analyze and diffuse the situation. I mean, we do need experts, but I don't think the way to fix these problems is for us to all think of the answer and then give it to the United States and then bomb people to, you know, success. I mean, it's not a top-down thing. And so my notion is that, I don't know if you've, I'm sorry, this is going to go off on a tangent, but do you know the notion of positive deviance, PD?
Remind me.
Okay, so the idea is that, you know, in any situation, you have 1 or 2% anomalies where it's not so bad. So in, I'm trying to remember, I think it was, in some country there was female... what do you call it? Circumcision, and it had been going on for thousands of years, and they couldn't figure out how to change it, and civil rights and all human rights workers were in there trying to do it, and they couldn't do it. And some PD professionals went in and found that in every village there were a couple of people who actually didn't get circumcised, and they did an analysis and found out that, well, it was such a horrible feeling, and they completely lost trust with their parents at that point when the girl was, you know, sacked in the middle of the night and, you know, circumcised. So, and the girls who spoke to their mothers and said, this is such a traumatic experience, I can never trust you again, the mothers felt so terrible that they didn't do it to the second girl. And they realized that this communication of the trauma was what was key in getting the mother not to do it to the next girl. So what they did is they started developing these little workshops where people talked about it after it happened. And then it spread like wildfire, and so this problem that they couldn't stop for, you know, hundreds of years suddenly was cured. And so I think that what we need to do is, if we can, in the diversity of all the different things that are going on, find the little anomalies where, okay, here's an impoverished country where the population isn't going crazy. Here is a great solution for an economic and for ecology that this little village has figured out. How can we amplify that? How can we spread that meme? And again, that's not about top-down analytical thinking. It's not about spending lots of money on marketing. It's about allowing the interesting memes inside of this diversity to emerge, and then for a catalytic reaction for this to spread. And again, it is kind of a cop out, but I do believe that we have much more power to solve this issue in the collective than we do in a bunch of think tanks and institutes, is my opinion.
It's a terrific summary of a lot of complicated ideas. Why don't we quit while we're ahead, but we will continue this conversation.
Okay, thank you.
Please, thank you. Joy Ito.